County, Pennsylvania, was unknown to paranormal enthusiasts until the Kevin Paul Amazon bestseller, Haunted Hills and Hollows, What Lurks in Greene County, Pennsylvania, revealed the phenomena lurking in and the haunted history of the southwestern corner of the Keystone State. Even more high strangeness can be found in Book 2 of the series, Kevin Paul's Haunted Hills and Hollows 2, still lurking in Greene County, Pennsylvania. One thing is certain, it is nearly impossible to be alone in Greene County. These riveting books, Haunted Hills and Hollows, and Haunted Hills and Hollows 2, by author Kevin Paul, in paperback, Kindle, and audiobooks, are available now on Amazon. In a world that's succumbing to cancel culture, fake news, and complete insanity that may force our beloved country down a deep, dark hole, now is the time to be prepared. Who are we? We are Survival Summit, and we produced some of the best films on wilderness survival, wilderness medical, escape and evasion, land navigation, communications, bugging out, and much more. We also carry survival and preparedness gear, such as medical kits, escape and evasion gear, holsters, fire starting gear. Yeah, we have it all. Come check us out on the web at www.thesurvivalsummit.com. Did you catch that? www.thesurvivalsummit.com to learn more about who we are and to be prepared for almost anything. www.thesurvivalsummit.com.
I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And yet, I ask you, is not an alien force already among us?
Night Dreams brings on the night worldwide. Did you know you can find us on your favorite app? And now you can watch us live on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to our channel and give us a thumbs up. And now, here's Gary.
And here I am, and boy, it's already Friday the 8th of April. Boy, I gotta get my taxes done. Well, in the news, well, they found, well, parts of an asteroid that they think that may have killed off the dinosaurs. That is very interesting, James. Think about that. They found parts of the asteroid that caused all the, well, dinosaurs to be killed off on the planet.
Yeah, I seen that. I thought that was very intriguing. I'm surprised we haven't heard much more about that, or they haven't found that before. But there's a lot to be learned from that kind of information in that kind of soil and rock, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? We have had Michio Kaku on the show and other scientists. You know, and they say we're not quite a level one planet. You know, our society is not a level one yet. I mean, a lot of people think that we are really civilized, but we're not. Because, you know, South Carolina has their first execution by firing squad ready to go. And they got that room made. It's 15 feet wide by 30 feet. They're going to take that, you know, that prisoner, put him against the wall, sit in a chair, and shoot him in the heart. And, you know, I how can I say it? I really think if we are ever going to be a level one society, I think that executing people is not a level one civilization. It's just something we shouldn't be even comprehending. Well, you know what? The army and the military has secret bases all over the world. So they thought. Because Google Maps, you can see all these secret bases around the world. So not just ours, but the Russian and all the other countries. They think they got these hidden military bases where nobody knows. But the cameras from Google, there they are. James, you know what? It proves a point. You know, like I was saying here the other night. You know, I went on to look at my property on Google. And there it was. I could read even the license plate off one of my vehicles. This is from a satellite. This is scary.
It is. I just seen a documentary today. They've got one. It could read a license plate. Matter of fact, it was even better than that. And wasn't you just explaining to the other day about how you were looking at Google Maps and you spotted your wife, I believe you said?
Well, my wife, we have a swimming pool. And, you know, we were surrounded. We're a mini farm. I got all cedar trees all around the property. Nobody can see in. It's quiet. You know, all we got is raccoons and, you know, possums and squirrels and things like that. Well, you know, when I was looking at the property, well, here was the image of my wife sunbathing. Okay, and I won't go any farther than that. And I printed it out on the computer and, you know, with the printer. And I, when she came, you know, home from work one day, I said, "Hey, Linda, you want to see a picture I got off of Google?" "What do you mean you got a picture of me on Google?" "Yeah. Look at this, and look how far it was away." That just made her mouth drop open. That's really scary. Well, you know, beachgoers say that they saw this alien creature that washed up from the deep. It had weird teeth, huge lips, and there's a picture of it. And I'll tell you what, I don't know what this sucker is, but I sure wouldn't want to even see one of those things. Maybe it's an ET from Venus. I don't know.
Listen, there's a lot of things out in the deep that we haven't even discovered yet. Can you imagine the things we haven't discovered that's got big teeth and lips and mouths? And, oh, boy.
My first wife.
See, there you go.
Yeah, she had big teeth. Among other things, but I can't go there. It's a G-rated show. Well, you know what? Secret government info confirms that there is objects on the Earth that did not originate on our planet.
Yeah, that's so true. But listen, there's stuff all the time. Matter of fact, didn't Art Bell have something that wasn't originated?
Oh yeah. Well, anyway, we'll be right back, and we got a great guest tonight. We got a show. It's tribute to the late John Lear. So we have Jim, his friend, on. We're going to talk all about John Lear. It's going to be a great show, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Take a journey of adventure and discovery for the enigmatic giants of the forests. Read On the Trail of Bigfoot by Mike Dupler. The author himself describes it this way.
Having found possible Sasquatch evidence, namely trees driven into the ground upside down, thought to be territory markers, led me to investigate this creature in my native Ohio. Several years and many forays into Bigfoot territory, I have found incredible evidence, which inspired my book, On the Trail of Bigfoot. Bigfoot is alive and has many fantastic abilities. The evidence is out there for all to see, but you need to know what to look for. My book will inspire those who have answered the call to seek this elusive creature, the Bigfoot. The truth is out there.
Read On the Trail of Bigfoot by Mike Dupler. Available now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and IndieBound.org. Did you know Night Dreams Talk Radio now has a great store? And now's the time to get that Night Dreamer, that cool Night Dreams tee, or Bigfoot mug. Night Dream Store has lots of awesome items to pick from, all for the Night Dreamer. For details, check out our show's website at www.nightdreamstalkradio.com.
Hi, this is Val Von Torn of Metatron Power and Light. You're listening to Gary Anderson and Night Dreams Talk Radio.
Hey, that is me. And, you know, people are messaging me already for Messenger. Well, you have no video feed. No, we don't. We have a malfunction. And we've been working on that malfunction since yesterday. We'll have our video back up by Tuesday of next week, so don't worry about it. But, you know, you can certainly get on chat and have fun on YouTube. You know, you just don't have to look at me. At least I didn't have to put makeup on here tonight. I tell you, my wife got upset, James, because she said, "You know what? You're not replacing my makeup. You keep using it to make yourself look younger." Well, I don't have to look younger. I'm young as I feel.
I wonder when she's going to yell at you for that, and now it came out.
Well, what can you say about our guest tonight?
Well, our guest tonight is James Goodall. Now, James is a leading authority on Lockheed Skunk Works, Area 51, and things that go bump in the night. But James also was friends with John Lear since 1975, and, well, he will be discussing his legacy here tonight.
Well, Jim, well, thank you for coming back on, and I'll tell you, we had a major loss. You know, I will say this, and then we can get into it. If it wasn't for John Lear, shows like mine, Coast to Coast, you know, Art Bell, and all these other shows wouldn't probably be talking about the paranormal and UFOs. They simply wouldn't. And I'm pretty sure you probably know the whole thing about it. You know, Art Bell was doing a political talk show in Las Vegas. And, you know, that John Lear went in there, talked to Art. They went into the conference room and he said, "Art, I got an idea how to take your show national." And Art said, "What do you mean?" And he went on saying, "Well, you know, you need to talk about the paranormal. You got to talk about UFOs. You got to talk about ghosts. You got to talk about all this other stuff." And Art thought about it. This is the story Art told me. He thought about it for a few minutes. And the next night, he tried it. And the phones rang off at the radio station like you wouldn't believe. And that was the start of really paranormal radio.
Pretty much everything that I'm doing today, or probably the last 40 years, is because of my friendship with John Lear. I mean, literally, I look back and whether it's UFOs, whether it's spooky airplanes, Area 51, you know, just outrageous people that I've been introduced to by John Lear. I would be just some guy living in Minnesota or living in, you know, living on Whidbey Island north of Seattle or whatever, and I would, this area of interest but more than likely I would not have been involved in this at all. And I think everything that I, you know, and all the people that I know, you know, all the interests I've had in spooky airplanes and UFOs and the Skunk Works is probably all leading back to John Lear. And I'm blessed to have been his friend. I saw him in the best of times. I saw him in the worst of times. And he is a one-off. There's nobody that I run into in my life, and I've been around 77 years. There's no one that can hold a candle to what my friend John Lear did in his life. I mean, I don't know the exact number, but he was type rated in over 50 aircraft types. Most of them were civilian, but he also had a number of military aircraft that he was qualified in. And he still holds 15 FIA, FAI world records. When he went around, he flew around the world solo on his 16th birthday in his dad's Lear 23. And it's no one can do it again because the flight paths that the senior William Lear had arranged for John to go around the world. I mean, he flew over Iran, Iraq. He flew through the stands, flew through parts of this, former Soviet Union, and through China. But he had connections with, Dad had all those connections. And he was almost like Superman. He wasn't supposed to be real, but he was. And I was blessed to have known him. And he is probably one of the funniest guys I know. He's also a prankster, and he always described himself as, "I'm what Howdy Doody would have looked like if he'd have grown up."
Well, you know, Jim, what I remember too, that John said that, you know, him and his father had a falling out. His father thought he should have been involved with Lear jets, and John, said, "I didn't want to be involved in building aircraft. I wanted to fly them."
Yeah, yeah. And the thing that I think the kingpin of them falling out was not only did Bill Lear and Moyes want John to, you know, take over Learjet, but his dad wanted him to take over and run Learfam. And there's one example that I know of. It's at the Museum of Flight, and it's hanging, it's hanging above in the Great Gallery. And John told his father, he said, "You'll never get this certified by the FAA." And I said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, first of all, it's going to be the very first all composite, not partially composite, all composite airplane." I helped. There was a guy named George Hamilton. George Harrison was the general manager there in the Reno area where they were built. The first prototypes of the Learfam were being built, and I helped carry the wing of the second prototype. With George picked up one hand, I picked up the other with one hand, and we carried the entire wing with one hand. It didn't weigh 10 pounds or 15 pounds. It may have weighed more than that, but it sure heck didn't feel like it. But John told both his dad and Moya that there's no way that the FAA is going to certify, one, an all-composite airplane, two, a twin-engine, single-propped airplane. You can certify it on helicopters, but this is something different. This is for an airplane. And John felt that that wouldn't make it through the certification process. And there was also one other thing. I don't know if it was the pusher prop, but it had to do something else. But there was three items, and John said, I'm not going to do it. So when Bill passed away, as the, and this is the funny part, and John has a twisted sense of humor. When they were reading Bill's will, it said, everything is divided equally among my children, except for John Olson Lear. He receives nothing. And he kept repeating that, all the way through the entire process. And so come Christmas time, John and Mary Lee would send out 1,400 or 1,500 Christmas cards. They had friends all over the planet. And John, the beautiful, custom-made Christmas card, and it said, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to everybody except for John Olson Lear. He gets nothing. And that was his Christmas card. So that's the type of character that I was, I had the pleasure of being friends with for all those years. I mean, it was almost 40 years. And I'm going to miss him. Every time I went to Las Vegas, I went to see John. I mean, he's the reason I met Bob Lazar. I mean, my gosh, we were, they had just announced, and this is November of 88, they announced the existence of the stealth bomber, the B-2, and the F-117, both of them in November. One was on the 22nd, one was on the 11th of November. Well, the first week of January, I'm up in Las Vegas, and John and I, we're on a search to go see if we can see something spooky. And we're heading north on US 95 out of Las Vegas, fairly early in the morning. And we're just north of Scotty's Junction. And Scotty's Junction is famous for having a house of ill repute, a legal house of prostitution that our federal government took over because of tax problems. And they ran it into the ground. I don't know how they could, you could do that, but...
Think about that. Jim, it would take only the government to run a house of ill. How can they do it? I mean, let's face it. I mean, you don't have to replace the merchandise that often. It's reusable.
Yeah. So we're about 20 miles. No, about 10 miles north of Scotty's Junction on US 95, and an F-117 flies over us, just crossing over the road on an angle at about 1,500 feet. I almost crashed the car. I mean, both John and I were just, oh my God, what do we have there? This is incredible. So we got to Tonopah. We grabbed a quick bite. Went past the station house, and there's US 6 heading east. We get on that, you go down about 14, 15 miles, and there's a turnoff to Tonopah Test Range. It's a big, huge sign, It has a B-43 nuclear weapon on a Nike Ajax booster on top of it. So that's what these tests, the shapes, not explosions. So we drove down almost 20 miles down to the main gate. It was very, very busy. We drove down the north side of the fence line, which is public lands. It's referred to as BLM, Bureau of Land Management, but BLM has gotten a bad connotation. So it's public lands. So we're sitting out there, and this is before digital cameras. So I was shooting, normally I shot Kodachrome, either 25 or 64, but it had to be sent off to Findlay, Ohio, got processed, and it came back. You had yourself a beautiful 35 millimeter slide. But I was shooting print 100. And I have a Nikon, I have a good telephoto lens, and we're on the fence line, and you can see the whole base. And anybody in your audience, if you want to go see where the stealth fighters were first operational, you can see it. You don't even have to get out of your car to see it. Just go down, it gets seen dirty, but that's the only concern. You're not in violation of anything. You're not in restricted area. They'll harass you. They're really good at it. So we get to the fence line. We're about a mile and a half, 2 miles down the fence line to the west. And we're looking at the whole, you can see the entire base. You're 8 miles from the end of the runway. And I look to the north and I see a brown a black fuzzy ball with a light on the bottom. And then a smaller white colored dot next to it with a light in the bottom. So I figured that was an F-117 because I know they were black. And it's probably a chase, which would be a T-38. So I'm sitting there waiting for it, and it's starting to come into view, and I'm looking at it through my viewfinder, and it's now filling up the viewfinder, and I'm starting to take pictures. And my body is surging like I'm a 10-year-old boy seeing a naked woman for the first time. I mean, I was just vibrating.
How about the second time?
No, I didn't have a problem the second time. The first time, it was really something else. So, I went through all 36 exposures, and John said, well, let's get the hell out of here. Let's get back and get these things processed. So we jump in the car and head back out. We continue east on US 6. We get to Warm Springs, which is the turnoff to the extraterrestrial highway, which it wasn't called back then, but it was Nevada 375. Get on it. We get down to Little Alien. First time I went there was in 87. And I knew Pat and Joe Travis. They ran the place. And Pat still does. Joe passed away a number of years ago. And John and I had a quick bite. And it said, hey, we got to get back to Vegas before the photomats close. Those of you who aren't old don't know what a photomat is. Back in the day, there were kiosks out in parking lots, much like coffee baristas are today. We'd drive up, you wouldn't even get out of your car. You get the envelope, fill out your name, put your exposed film in it, give it to the person, they come back the next day or 2 days later, and you have your prints. So I was getting really concerned because I knew it was going to take a couple days to get this thing processed, and so I didn't know if I was going to have anything. But John said, yeah, don't worry about it. He said, it'll work out. So we jump in the car, we're heading back to Las Vegas. We get there, it's after 9 o'clock, all the photo mats are closed, and I was kind of disappointed. And John said, well, I have a new friend, just moved here from Albuquerque, I think he'll enjoy him. He'll be here in about 10 or 15 minutes. And shortly thereafter, there was a knock on the door. John went and answered the front door, came into his study. And it was a nice-looking young man named Bob Lazar. He said he had just moved here from Albuquerque. And I told him what my dilemma was about shooting the F-117. And he said, I got a C-41 processing unit at home. Let's go to my place. So he lived off of West Charleston. So we jump in his car, and we're about a block from Lear's place. And Lazar looks at me, and he said, I feel sorry for Lear. I said, what do you mean you feel sorry for Lear? He lives in a big, huge house. He flies all over the world. I mean, he's known all over the planet. He says, yeah, but the fool is from one of the most, one of the famous. Dad brought Learjet to the world. And he said, and the SOB believes in UFOs. He said, I'm a nuclear physicist. If I can't prove it mathematically to put my hands on it, it can't happen. He says, he couldn't put a gun to my head to convince me that UFOs were real. So we all know what happened about a year later because of Lear. Bob Lazar went public. So that was the beginning of my really getting into the UFO spooky things that go bump in the night. And it was just so typical of Lear on the friends that he had. I mean, he just he was connected with so many people, and because of Bob Lazar, it did even more crazy stuff. I mean, one of them.
Okay,
you know about
now
it.
Jim, we need to take a break, and we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes. We're going to talk about. We're going to talk about Enterprise, not the thing that went up, you know, in space. We're going to talk about Enterprise car rentals. So stay tuned. We'll be back with Jim. This is probably the best story of anything, and I have heard them all. I have heard all through the last 40 some years doing a talk show. This one is like the tops. We'll be back with Jim. We're talking about, you know, the late John Lear, and great. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you searching for deeper answers when it comes to experiences with the Sasquatch and other cryptids? One man who seems to be taking that deeper dive is Ron Moorhead. His incredibly clear, scientifically vetted Bigfoot Sierra sounds will send shivers. In addition to these recordings, he's written 2 books, Voices in the Wilderness, which is the chronicle of interactions that went on for years up in the Sierra Nevada mountains, and then his latest, The Quantum Bigfoot, where he bravely goes where others fear and takes it head on, again backed by science. The disappearing tracks, the pixelated images, and the screams in the dark. All of this and more can be found at ronmoorhead.com. That's www.ronmoorhead.com. In a world that's succumbing to cancel culture, fake news, and complete insanity that may force our beloved country down a deep, dark hole, now is the time to be prepared. Who are we? We are Survival Summit. And we produced some of the best films on wilderness survival, wilderness medical, escape and evasion, land navigation, communications, bugging out, and much more. We also carry survival and preparedness gear, such as medical kits, escape and evasion gear, holsters, fire starting gear. Yeah, we have it all. Come check us out on the web at www.thesurvivalsummit.com. Did you catch that? www.thesurvivalsummit.com to learn more about who we are and to be prepared for almost anything. Night Dreams Talk Radio, After Dark, wants to give a big shout out to all the truckers that listen to our show. Coming to you live and covering all time zones like a glove. Here's Gary Anderson on Night Dreams Talk Radio.
And we are back with Jim. Yeah, the best story I ever heard was about John Lear going to Enterprise Rent-A-Car and renting a car. Why don't you tell the listeners what they did with that car? They didn't go for a ride with it as such, but they sure took that car for one hell of a ride.
And what they did, I mean, they had full insurance on it. So if it got damaged out in the desert, regardless of why it got damaged, it would be fully covered. And there was the event where this all began was called Desert Blast, and it was a gathering put together by both John and Bob Lazar and a few other players. Bob Lazar built commercial grade fireworks in his garage. His neighbors didn't know there was 500 to 1,000 pounds of black powder in his garage in any given day. including one particular time, he had 5 gallons of hydrazine.
Oh,
which
wow.
They use in dragsters and rockets. It's very, very unstable. And John ordered it, Bob ordered it for fun. And when it arrived, he was dumbfounded. Here's this big semi pulls up in front of his house, open it up, and there's only one thing in the semi, his 5 gallons of, my mind just went blank, nitromethane. So he would build commercial grade fireworks in his garage. And then every year, and he'd only get like 24 to 48 hours notice, he would have what he called desert blast. He had 13 of them over the course of 13 years. And where they usually had it was just as you turn off Interstate 15, I think it's going up US 93 near Apex. And there's a big dry lake bed out there. And it's now filled with, sun, pads for generating electricity for Vegas. And they would get 1,000 people out there, even with only 24 hours to 48 hours notice. But one of the things they want to do, they had rocket cars. Lear had a rock-powered go-kart that Lazar had made that he drove around. It was just a crazy thing. And one of the things they do, they bring, a number of people would bring fully automatic machine guns, and they had a 50 caliber, water cooled, like you see in World War II movies. And they had this rent a car, and I don't know what it was, what brand it was. It's probably a Ford. It says found on the road dead or fix or repair daily. So that's probably a Ford that was out there. And I'm a Chevy guy. And they decided, gee, I wonder what would happen, what it would look like if we were to see how indestructible this car is, and it pertains to having an argument with a machine gun, 50 caliber machine gun. They, for fun, took this pretty much a brand new car from Enterprise. And they blew it to smithereens. I forget how many thousands of rounds they went through it, but they just obliterated this car.
Now, Jim,
I don't know, Jim,
didn't they also mount the machine gun also in the helicopter too, and did some shoot? I think John said they did some shooting from the helicopter with it too.
Oh, they did. You name it, they did it. and there was nothing off limits. Now, one of the things that they wanted to do, they wanted to see just how powerful the barrels of fertilizer and diesel fuel that blew up the federal building in Oklahoma City. They wanted to see how effective and how much power did that that thing had. And I think when McVeigh blew up the government center, I think they had like 7 or 8, I think they were 32-gallon barrels filled with fertilizer and blasting caps and diesel fuel. So John invited a gentleman from ATF, not doing anything behind anybody's back. So they invited the ATF guy there to monitor everything, make sure everything's safe and no one was doing anything crazy. And they had they had one barrel, and they took it out into the middle of the dry lake bed. And everybody's about 3/4 of a mile away, maybe even farther. And they detonated it remotely. It blew everybody over, literally knocked almost everybody off their feet. So, this is the craziness that they did. If it isn't helicopters or jet-powered go-karts, and they even had a jet rocket-powered bicycle that someone was riding around, and had a pulse, not a pulse detonation, but a the same type of engine that, the early cruise missiles, World War II types, the buzz bomb type of engine in it.
Now, I got to ask you a question. Was there a lot of people drinking and smoking Mary Jane there, too, at the same time?
I don't recall anybody. I was 13. I only went to two of them because I lived in Minnesota, and I didn't always have an opportunity to jump in an airplane and fly out there. But there was a lot of drinking, and I wasn't aware of any, at the time, illegal smoking material used at Desert Blast. I don't think that was something that John loved to drink, but I don't think he was into marijuana or any other type of recreational drugs. His recreational drug was booze, and he was really good at it. The master's degree in it, and it was just, you name it. There wasn't anything too crazy for John to be part of. I mean, it's just when our mutual friend and the guy who actually introduced me to John Lear was John Andrews. John Andrews was the guy from Testers who came out with the quarter inch scale model of the F-117, the quarter inch scale model of the C-130, and the quarter inch scale model of the SR-71 and the YF-12. All because of influence that I pushed on him. But John Andrews had been friends with Lear since the 60s. And he says, I got a friend of mine that you have to meet. The two of you are so much alike in a lot of respects as far as being just crazy. And I got introduced to John Lear. I guess it was about 70, late 73, 74 time frame. And it is the most unique and fascinating friendship I've ever had with anybody, because he's a real live walking talking, well, not live anymore, but a real alive walking talking cartoon. He is funny. He can look at you and you think he is pissed off at you like you wouldn't believe. He's swearing at you, threatening you this. And all of a sudden, you can see this twinkle in his eye, and it's, oh, you son of a bitch, said, you're pulling my leg. And he'd laugh. He had the greatest laugh. He would just laugh when he caught you on something.
Now, I want to jump in here, too, because we only got about 20 minutes left. Now, this rental car, can you imagine? I just want to touch this because, okay, you rent it from Enterprise, right? You drive it out to the desert. You shoot it with every type of caliber gun you can think of. Your 50 caliber is going to go one side and come out the other side. It's going to go into the engine block. You know that. And from what John said is they had to take it back on a flatbed to Enterprise. And can you imagine... Anytime I've ever rented a car from Enterprise, they have their clipboard and they come out to look at the car. First thing they do is look at the gas gauge where they figure they can nail you for double the price for gas. Oh, gee, you're quart low. That's going to cost you $20. Can you imagine? They got their clipboard, right? And can you imagine the guy pissing himself when he sees his car with hundreds and hundreds of 50 caliber and 30-06 and whatever caliber, shot into the car.
Yeah.
Literally, the car is nothing more than Swiss cheese. And the guy is probably freaking out, like, oh, my God, if I rented this car to the guy, I'm going to lose my job. How am I going to explain this? And the story is what John said is the guy asked him, what happened to the car? And with a straight face, John said, well, this is what happens if you leave it on a bad street in Las Vegas.
Yes.
Only John Lear could do that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the type of guy he was. I mean, he was just... he's gone now, and I miss him. So I saw him last November, and I brought two guys with me. Dale and a guy named Mike, and Dale's from Kingman, and he's been wanting to meet Lear forever. And I said, well, I'll call him up. And John said, come on down. So he came on down, but you can tell that his time was short. And it just breaks my heart that my friend is gone. And I won't have the the fun times, the crazy times. I mean, one of the craziest things, I mean, not necessarily crazy, but so typical Lear, Lear said, there's something going back on at Tonopah. Even all the F-117s are gone. They went to Holloman, and then they, the program came to an end. So Tonopah Test Range was put in, supposedly in caretaker status. And Lear said, no, I've heard rumors there's stuff going on there. So we decided we were going to go down there at night. So we have night vision goggles. You know, we know exactly where to go. And you go down the main road, and you turn off, quite a ways before they can see you at the guard shack. And we're about 2 miles from the road. And we're looking down the base, and there's all sorts of activity. And I see, Lear says, there's some vehicles coming up. The lights are off. And I start looking, and it's three armored personnel carriers. Lights had turned off. It's about 11 o'clock at night. And off flight, the Tonopah Test Range facility. And one was coming up from the south, one coming from the east, one coming from the west. So I stand up and yell real loud, hey, we're good guys, we're taxpayers. And all of a sudden, we have floodlights on us. John has three little red dots in his chest. I have three little red dots in my chest. And then there's a vehicle coming down the public land side of the fence. And this gentleman comes out around John's pickup, and he has his Area 51 visitor's permit on his window to make sure he knows that he's okay to go to Area 51. And the guy said, you're in a restricted area, I'm ordering you to leave. And John's not saying a word. He's just sitting back there just snickering. I said, well, yeah, we're in public lands. And there's an official government map that gives the longitude and latitude. And if you look at next to the fence post where my buddy is, you'll see a USGS medallion. He said, well, I'm ordering you out of here. And I said, well, who are you? I said, I'm Captain So-and-so with ASI, Advanced Security, Inc. I said, you're rent-a-cop. You don't have a jurisdiction this side of the fence. And boy, he's getting pissed. So I want to see some ID. And I said, I don't have to show you squat. So, but tell you, and he started getting really nasty. So I've been deputized by Nye, Lincoln, Esmeralda County to uphold the state, the laws of the state of Nevada and the federal government. I said, well, good for you. And I said, tell you what, you show me yours, I'll show you mine. So he hands me his ASI badge. And I said, sir, that's not a valid form of ID. The whole time, Lear is just snickering. I hand it back to him, and he very begrudgingly hands me his Nevada driver's license. I lived in Minnesota at the time. And I don't have my reading glasses on. I couldn't tell what the name was. So I handed him my license. Lear handed his. He hands it to a guy on the south side of the fence, takes it over to the probably the supervisor, turns the light on inside the armored personnel carrier, and I hear, oh, it's good all in Lear. The lights went off. The dots went away. Everybody dispersed because they knew they weren't going to intimidate us out of the area. And that's the type of... that's how well known John was, and for, as a matter of fact, I was. As far as it had to do with anything in and around Area 51. But one of the warm things that we did when John Andrews passed away, he died of cancer. He asked me, and he asked John also. He said, "When I die, will you find some way to drop my ashes off over Area 51. So we're trying to figure out how to do it. John finally passes away. We go to his funeral. It was on a Wednesday. Darlene, his wife, gives us about half John's ashes. And we head back to Vegas. This was in San Diego. We head up back to Las Vegas, spent the night. And then Lear said, well, I rented a Jet Ranger, and we're gonna deposit John Andrews' ashes over Area 51. I said, let's go. So we go down to the executive terminal there, McCarran. And he was type-rated in the Jet Ranger, but he felt that it'd be better if he had a flight instructor. So we took off. And if you've been to Las Vegas and you've headed north on Interstate 15, as you leave the area, you see a ridge line that goes straight up, and it's very, very sharp edged. And so we flew over that when the helicopter, and there was a 30-mile-an-hour wind from the north. We flew up. I thought we were going to go inverted. I mean, my eyes were about as big as saucers. But I looked at John, and he was, you know, he was just doing something and doing something. They didn't seem very concerned at all. And we're now, you know, we're just north and east, west a little bit of Ash Springs. And Larry gets on the intercom. I got to pee really, really bad. So, and then the pilot said, me too. And I said, well, me three. So we landed in the middle of the desert. And we watered the plants and jumped back in the helicopter. And as we came over Hancock Summit into Kittatinny Valley, which is due east of Area 51, and you can see the back road to Area 51 as we came over the ridge, airplane, I think it was a Beech 1900. It's a long, you know, very nice, a nice looking aircraft, twin turboprop. And the Guard and the Air Force used them for getting your time at, you know, in the cockpit or transporting people around. And we headed up. We just followed 375. We went over the summit towards Rachel, and then we headed due west. And you can look down, and you can see where the boundary of Area 51 is. I mean, there's a fence. Some places are only fence posts, but they've driven the fence line so many times. There's tracks here. You can see them real easy. And Lear gets on the radio. He knows the frequency that they monitored Area 51. He gets on the horn and says, "Dreamland, Dreamland. This is John Lear and Jim Goodall announcing that John Andrews is on final approach to runway 14 right." And with that, I opened the window, dumped his ashes down. And as soon as they went straight down, and as soon as they got below the helicopter and they downwashed, his ashes just went, I mean, just, they actually went up, and they're scattered all over the north end of Area 51. And it was just a fitting tribute to a nice guy. And I think we may do that with Lear. I don't know. His memorial service is supposed to be the 24th in Las Vegas. There's going to be a bunch of us there for another reason, but they're trying to make arrangements to do his memorial service. Yeah, if anybody from Las Vegas is listening, you're still looking for a venue because of, Las Vegas is back on the rebound from all the shutdowns and everything over the years, the last 2 years. Everything is filled or too expensive. And we're trying to find a place. We're going to try to see if we can use the facility on base there in Nellis. But John, even though he flew for the Central Intelligence Agency for 14 years, he doesn't qualify as being a retired or former military. So if anybody knows, if you want to get hold of John, I'm sure he can get hold of
him. Well, they can actually just go onto my website and email us any information, and I can get it to you.
Super. And if you do that, that would be wonderful. We have a couple, it's on the 24th, so we still have, a good 2 weeks almost before it has to be, before we need the facility. We need it before then, just so we, get it all set up. But his daughter, Allison, Allie, is working with Lauren Felton to get a facility. And depending on how far the word goes out, there could be a lot of people there. I know there's a lot of people in the Las Vegas area that that think the world of Lear.
Oh yeah,
and he's just it's someone's going to someone who has a lot of money, not me. There should be a memorial put together somewhere for Lear. I mean, a bronze bust of his head at the airport.
Well, Jim,
or somewhere.
Just think about this. Like I said at the beginning of the show, if it wasn't for John Lear, seriously, going to Art Bell, we wouldn't be talking, about this stuff. It wouldn't have happened the way it progressed. Now, I will say one thing. I did ask John the last time he was on the show. Art again, was a friend of mine, and he was always thinking about what time, one time John Lear on a show said, you know, when you die, you don't want to go to the light. You want to go to the darkness. It's a trick. If you go to the light, you're actually going to go to hell. If you go to the darkness, you're going to go to heaven. And, you know, that really bothered Art. When Art turned 70 years old, he had this thing about, he thought he was washed up. He thought his life was over. He wasn't going to live much longer. And he actually didn't, did he? And you know, it bothered him. And then finally, John said, you know, I was wrong. The person that told me that information about going to the darkness of light, they were wrong. And he said on the show, when I go, I'm going to go to the light. And hopefully he did.
Yeah, I look back at the life and times of John Lear, and I only know a small bit of it. I mean, he could tell me when he was flying in Laos and Cambodia in areas that Americans weren't supposed to be flying. This is when he was flying for Continental Air Service. Mm-hmm. He was in a single engine. You know, he had a single engine. It's a Swiss short takeoff and landing high wing aircraft. Good looking airplane. They're still flying today. I don't know the exact, you know, the name of the aircraft. But he, you know, he said he always flew with his the left, you know, the right hand door was never on, because a lot of times if he's coming in and he's being shot at, he'll just push the cargo out. He'll come down almost on the runway, not stop, but just push the cargo off with his seat and you know, let it crash onto the onto the dirt runway. And these runways that he was landing on, I mean, this is one of the reasons why I think he was such an incredibly good pilot, is they've taken a mountaintop, they've chopped the top off, you have 700 feet, and then it drops off. First of all, it drops off on both ends, and on both ends is deep jungle. I mean, you're talking about, you know, four or five canopies of jungle going down, and the sunlight probably doesn't hit the ground at all. And so many times, and you were forbidden from carrying weapons, but he always carried his .45 with him. And he said he'd be flying, you know, dropping some stuff off, and all of a sudden he's getting ground fire from inside the jungle, and he'd just bank over there, and he'd throw in a magazine and just bam, 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 you know, put in another one. And he would just, he'd use all his ammunition he had shooting the VC. Didn't know if he ever hit anybody, but that's the type of, he was a swashbuckler. I mean, if we were alive in the day of you know, Captain Kidd and, you know, and Blackbeard and the Pirates of the Caribbean, I'm sure John Lear would have had his own you know, black, was it, he calls them, the, you know, the black orchid or whatever it is, ship flying the, you know, flying the skull and crossbones. That would have been Lear.
Yeah, and it would have been full of whiskey and rum, too, wouldn't it?
Well, absolutely.
Hey, Jim, yeah. I hate to say this. Our time is up. And, you know, I know he was a friend of yours, and I know you're hurting. You know, it really hit, like I said, when you sent the message over to my producer that his passing, it made it really hard to do the last half an hour of the show. I really didn't know John Lear very well, other than, you know, being a guest a couple times on the show and talking a little bit before the show. But he was really a nice person. The first time, like I said, when I talked to him, you know, back a few years ago, I thought, God, this guy is a big, you know what. But, you know, again, you know, I don't know if he was joking with me or whatever. But, you know, the last time we was on the show, it was like we were close buddies. I mean, just a total flip. And, you know, I do miss him because, again, you know, if it wasn't for him and Art Bell, you know, shows like mine wouldn't be happening. And, you know, who else can take a car from Enterprise and give it back and not go to jail over it? That's the thing. How could he have not have got away with, you know, shooting up a car to nothing and with a straight face? Well, hey, that's a bad part of Las Vegas.
Lear.
Yeah, he got pulled.
He was John Lear.
I got 1 minute left. What can you say or what do you want to say in that last minute?
I miss him. I adore the man. He was, I'm blessed by his friendship. There are people who claim that, you know, John was a plant or whatever it is. And I know it. John Lear was 100% original. He was John Lear from beginning to end. And there's nobody on the planet that is like him, and nobody on the planet will ever be. There'll never be another John Lear. They broke the mold. They buried it. They covered with concrete. They made it radioactive to make sure that that mold was never used again. And he's going to be missed. And I don't think the impact of him passing has really hit the community yet, because he'd been doing this his whole life.
I know.
I mean, his whole life was around aviation, and things would go bump in the night. One real quick. I don't know if you have enough time.
We got 20 seconds.
Yeah, he's flying a Learjet to Miami. He fell asleep on autopilot. He was over the Bahamas when he woke up. So, geez. He did a quick turnaround, came down, and altered his flight plan. This was planned. He said, no, if they'd known it, they would have pulled my ticket. but he's a crazy guy, and he's gone, and he's missed. It's a shame.
Well, Jim,
I thank you for the time.
Jim, thank you for so much and sharing all these good stories about John Lear.
My pleasure. And anytime, and next time I'm in Gig Harbor, I'll look you up.
Okay, my friend, you take care.
Will do.
Okay.
And say hi to James for me if you're listening, and you have a good one. I'll talk at you later.
Okay, you take care. Well, hey, James, who is our next guest on Tuesday?
Oh, boy, let me tell you something, Gary. Our next guest is E.J. Snyder. Yes, he was on Naked and Afraid, I don't think, 6 times. He's like a champion on that show. Plus, he was on the show Lost.
And a Survivor, and about 25 other different shows. And he's world-renowned survivalist. He trained, well, how to survive, to rangers. He's just one heck of a person when it comes to survival. He's going to be talking about how to survive out in the woods, how to survive if something bad happens. You don't want to miss the show. And again, Naked and Afraid, 6 times. That is really, you know, gee, 6 different women on Naked and Afraid. Could you imagine you're out in the jungles and you don't have any food, you don't really have any weapons of anything, and you're naked on top of it? I mean, just think about that.
I did. Matter of fact, I talked to EJ, and he told me he did 260-some days of nakedness, and I said, wow, you pretty much spent 2/3 of a year naked. And he says, hey, you know what? You're right.
Well, it's going to be a good show. So, you know, again, we're going to talk about how to survive. We got hit with a solar flare, or we got nuked, or you're out in the woods backpacking and you get lost. How are you going to survive? What are you going to do to drink water? What do you look for? How do you stay warm? We're going to talk all that stuff on Tuesday. And if you want more information, go to our website at www.nightdreamstalkradio.com. Click on upcoming guests and read all about them. I tell you what, Sergeant Major in the Army, I tell you what, it over 40 medals. This guy is like the number one survivalist. Well, till Tuesday, again, I want to apologize. We had a malfunction as of yesterday, and I don't have the video part back up. I got a new video card coming in for the camera, so that'll be here on Monday. So Tuesday we'll have the video up again. I apologize, but look, at least you didn't have to look at me tonight. Well, anyway, again, my heart goes out to the family of John Lear, and really he's my idol, because, you know, I started out in radio almost 49 years ago. And yes, we talked about paranormal things, but he made the paranormal, ETs, abductions, and UFO, a house word where you could talk about it and people didn't think you were that strange. Again, to the guys at Enterprise, I wish I had the balls to do that. Everybody have a good one. We will catch you on Tuesday. Stay out of trouble, please. Keep that hockey stick out of the ice.